You've entered Bookstorm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Welcome back to Bookstorm Podcast. We are so excited to have the fabulous Kate White with us today. She is the New York Times best-selling author of 16 novels in the suspense genre. She's 8 standalone psychological thrillers, including the book that we're here to talk to her about today that Kristen and I loved, The Second Husband. This is going to be released on June 28th. We're filming ahead, and we're excited to be a part of that release. So let me tell you a little bit about Kate, because she has a very fascinating history here, career history. For 14 years, Kate served as editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan magazine, which, under her expertise, became the most successful magazine in single-copy sales in the U.S. Wow, Kate, that's quite an accomplishment. She loved her magazine career, but she decided about 9 years ago to concentrate on her full-time passion, which was writing, and we are very glad that she did, and so are our readers. She has been nominated for so many awards. I can't name all of them, but let me tell you a few. The International Thriller Writers Award. She's a Kelly Ripa Book Club pick. She's number one on Amazon, New York Times bestseller. In addition to this, she's been on the Today Show, CBS This Morning, and Good Morning America. And I have to add that I just saw on social media that you gave the commencement speech at the prestigious Union College, and you received an honorary doctorate. Congratulations, Dr. White.
Here's what I found.
Thank you so much. It was such an honor for me. I was in the first co-ed class at Union. And so partly because this is a big anniversary for co-education there, they asked me to come back and give the commencement speech, which was both exhilarating and terrifying.
I'm sure, because it's such a very important day for these students. But I can only imagine that you gave something wonderful, just wonderful. So in closing about Kate's history, let me just say she is married. She's the mother of 2 children, and they divide their time between New York City and Uruguay. And we have to ask you, how and why Uruguay? How exciting.
It's a great country. When my kids were little, one of them was not a museum kind of kid. He once threw a bottle toward a David Hockney painting, and I thought, uh-oh. But once they get old enough to travel, we're going to have to find a different kind of vacation. So we did a lot of eco trips through South America, and began to think we'd love to live there one day during the winter because it's reverse season. So we picked Uruguay, and we love it. We've had a home there for about 13 years now.
It sounds wonderful. And you're fluent in the language, having been there for so many years?
Well, because I still have this full-time job writing, I do study Spanish every day, but my husband has become fluent. So I am grateful to him for helping me out down there, because there aren't a lot of English speakers in Uruguay. It really helps to know the language. Mm-hmm. Though sign language works too.
You know, that's our or if you speak extra loud, sometimes that helps too.
Americans think that's the case, Chris, but it isn't.
Well, that's just, everything is so fascinating. We're thrilled to have you with us today.
Thank you so much.
Well, we're here to talk about Kate's new book, The Second Husband. And this is a story that digs into the issue of how well do you really know those that you love? And if you don't mind, we won't give any spoilers away, but we do like to give a little bit of a background on the book. So I'm going to kind of summarize it very briefly. If you want to add anything, we would love that. But the story centers around 30-something Emma, And she's a widow who has lost her husband after what appeared to be a random act of violence. And it was a situation of he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. She eventually rebuilds her life with Tom, who is smart and handsome and thoughtful and attentive. And she finally feels safe and in love. And they are living in this beautiful home. She's looking forward to a beautiful life. One day, a homicide detective shows up at her door and says that they are reopening and taking another look at the case of her husband's homicide. Now, she had been cleared of it, but this starts to worry her and concern her on many levels. So at this point, as this investigation starts winding out, she starts to question things, including what does she know about her new husband and other people who are in her life and around her. If you would love to add anything, we would love to hear it. Of course, we never give away spoilers.
No, Kristen, that's perfect. I think the only thing I would add, that part of the problem for her is that she married Tom fairly quickly after her first husband died. So that always, as her lawyer says, you know, that's a red flag for the police. They're always looking for what's, if they can't find anything in the old investigation, they're looking for what's new that might be worth taking a look at. And she remarries, it's not much more than a year after her first husband has died.
Excellent. And I love the word that you used, red flag, two words, because really that's a big part of that underlying theme here are those red flags in our lives and how we pay attention to them. Well, Chris, Kate, if you're ready, we can brave the storm.
We are ready. We can't wait to talk to Kate White. First, I have to say for our listeners and our readers, I could not put this thriller down. And I have to thank Kate as the writer because you understand that we readers are smart and we're savvy and we want to help solve this crime. You allowed us to do that. The protagonist, Emma, as Kristen said, is not happy when her husband's murder case is reopened. She's terrified of becoming the lead suspect. She begins to be suspicious of everyone around her. Some of her suspicions are justified, but some are really pure paranoia. What were the weaknesses, or maybe even strengths, in this character Emma's personality that you wove in there that caused her to become so suspicious?
Well, Emma is a trend forecaster and researcher, and I got interested in that field because I worked with people in that capacity when I was running Cosmopolitan, because it was important for me to understand our readers' generations, which were different than mine. At the time, it was Gen X and Gen Y, and I worked with somebody who not only looked at generational research, but looked at trends. And so just by her nature, Emma's probably somebody who might be a little bit paranoid like me, but also because of her job, she's always looking for things out there that might hint at a trend or something to pay attention to. And a key thing she says in the book, I think that's important, is she talks one day about how as a trend forecaster, she pays attention to the rule of three. If something happens once, it's just chance. Twice, it's a curiosity or coincidence. But three times, there's a pattern. And so she's really wired to always be looking for patterns, and maybe she overdoes it a bit because of her job, because of her nature. But I would say that for all of us in life, it's important to pay attention to the rule of three that I actually have learned from the, you know, being working with people who are trend forecasters, to pay a little bit more attention instead of dismissing it when something happens more than a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. I love that you showed us. She was looking at all these different characters in her rule of three. And we as the reader started a little investigation of our own. And I was suspicious of everyone at one point. And I said, okay, now calm down now. I can't give any spoilers, but it was a lot of fun. And I think you offered a few little bunny trails and some little clues to maybe let us go off on a little side path and then return back to the mystery. I just thought it was phenomenal. The other thing that I thought in our own lives, I translated it to us. I thought, this is something that we all do. And we should do. We become a little suspicious of different scenarios with relationships, let's say. So I took it as far as like we become suspicious of maybe work situations, marriage situations, problems that could arise with our children. And part of our being as a wife, mother, friend, spouse, we do tend to analyze these situations. Suspicion is good. Paranoia can lead you down a problematic trail. And were you thinking of any of this in your own life or in our lives as you wrote these characters, that we tend to overanalyze things sometimes?
I think we do. You know, we do go down that rabbit hole. In fact, one of the points I made in my commencement speech was, don't believe everything you think. How important it is to step back and ask yourself, is it time to refresh that thought? Now, the other extreme, though, is that sometimes we aren't paranoid enough. A friend called the other day. She's quite a bit older than me, but she's being scammed and she was buying into what they were telling her. And I just thought she got so excited. She didn't step back and be a little paranoid. So I think sometimes we're at one end, sometimes we're at the other, but it's really important if you can just step back. Why am I feeling this way? Is there really evidence for feeling this way? Are there red flags I'm ignoring? It's key to do that.
And Kristen and I were talking before we got started that a lot of times in life, we want something to turn out such a specific way that we pretend the red flags aren't even there. And we were actually talking about business endeavors,
right?
People that we had known who ignored advice even from someone and said that it was trivial because they wanted that business plan to succeed. And it could go in all sorts of facets.
Yes, it's so interesting. I remember years ago interviewing a woman who was a researcher of in terms of the planets, and Venus was one of the planets that she was a key researcher on. And she said, you know, as scientists, you just can't make the mistake of going in with this idea that you want to confirm, you know, that it's confirmation bias. And we all are guilty of confirmation bias. We want something to happen. And so we let ourselves think it's happening. We let certain evidence point in that direction and ignore the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That shows the importance of having mentors in your life and people with wisdom.
Yes, and being willing to listen to them. One, I was saying to a friend the other day, one of the things that's been interesting for me as an author, people who are aspiring authors sometimes come for advice. And I can't tell you the amount of time that they don't want to hear what you have to say, whether it involves, you know, it's important to really start from the bottom and maybe be in a writer's group or this or that. And sometimes they'll say to me, well, you've given me something interesting to think about, as opposed to, hey, thank you for telling me the way it is. They want to hear that it's going to be easy to do. They're going to do it. And again, I think as much as we can step back and examine the situation and kind of, ask ourselves questions and have it, as you just said, Kristen, a mentor who will ask us those questions. It's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'd like to pick up on another theme that emerged as I was thinking about Emma. She wanted to start a new life, and many people start a new life in the hopes of really having a clean slate and starting over. A lot of times people might move or even change their name, right? Change jobs. And I was wondering, can we ever really escape our past experiences? Because aren't they very much a part of who we are now? And I was thinking maybe we're not being necessarily true to ourselves when we leave an entire part of our life behind.
That's such a good question. And I have two thoughts on that. First of all, there's that great quote from George Santayana. I think it was a Spanish philosopher, and it's been attributed to different people, but I looked it up once and it's his. And he says, those who cannot remember the past are doomed to repeat it. And so it's so important to learn from the experience and ask, how did I get into this jam? What can I do differently? My husband was a news anchor, and he once interviewed a psychiatrist about divorce and second marriages. And the guy told him 75% of people remarry again the same type of, I mean, they married for the second time, the same kind of person they were married to the first time. So they haven't stepped back and said, what didn't work about this relationship? What are some signs I need to look for, so I'm not just marrying the same person all over again? So it is important to learn from the past, but I also think you can move on. Years ago, when I was at Cosmo, early on, somebody wrote in to say that they had loved this piece in Cosmo. I think it might have been back in the 60s when Helen Gurley Brown was the editor, and she always remembered this piece. And I looked it up. It was called You Can Run Away from the Past. And it was about this young woman who moved to Europe after she'd gotten a rut in the US, and she kind of recreated herself. And I think her point was, you don't have to wallow in the past. So you've got to learn from it. But I also think, Kristen, you can then start fresh and make a new life for yourself too, using what you learned.
Yeah, I love that. We recently read a quote that you should at least be on nodding terms with your former self.
And, right? Yes.
And I love that, because you're right. There's not only those lessons, but there's also that authenticity. And to me, that's also a sign of maturity, you know, that yeah. I can be there and now I'm moving forward.
Yeah, I had a really bad kind of crummy sourpuss boyfriend in my late 20s. And I really felt I have to be careful not to meet this person again. And I sort of used a friend's husband as kind of the role model of the kind of guy I wanted. And I remember I went for a couple of dates with this really, really gorgeous guy. And he was so interesting, had a fabulously interesting job. And he made a sarcastic remark on the third date. And I just thought, you know, red flag, you've told yourself you're going to be on the lookout for this. And it was really hard to say to him the next time he called, no, I don't think so. And then just by coincidence, the people who set us up were many years later, were having a party, and he was going to be there. And they just said to me, would you mind, so-and-so is going to be there? I said, no. And I said, how's he doing anyway? And they said, oh, his marriage just ended. Apparently he was just a miserable human being to live with. So I was so glad I'd learned from my past mistake.
Yeah, that's great.
I love that. We were talking a little about that before too, that I was talking about I mentor some younger women through the junior league here, a little organization I'm in, and they will come and ask me questions. And one was telling me about someone she was interested in dating and wanted to date exclusively. And all she did was kind of list everything that he did wrong. And I said, why are you going for him? And I said to her, are you going for him because he's hard to catch?
Yeah.
So you have that a little bit. You have right. We have some inherent things within us that make us more attracted to a specific person.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But to break out of that mold, you almost have to consciously say, this is who I'm attracted to, but this is bad. I'm going for this type and I don't even like this type, but I just got to try it and see if this is going to work. It's tricky.
Yeah. I remember once when I was at Cosmo, one of the great things about having that job is that we interviewed some of the best relationship experts and psychologists. And there was a woman who said, who was a psychologist, that if you've had a string of bad relationships, you're the common denominator. So you have to figure out what kind of choices that you are making, what kind of thing is locked in your brain that's attracting you to that kind of person. Try to break out of it.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. This book was so deep on so many levels. I want to turn the tables here and talk about something different. Emma's first husband, as we all know now, was murdered. Now, I don't think I'm giving away too many spoilers here to say he wasn't really a great guy. Emma was actually considering leaving him before he died. She doesn't want to tell anybody that she was going to leave him. And she doesn't really even want to say he wasn't a great guy for a couple reasons. First, she doesn't want to become a suspect. But also, she doesn't want to be looked at as the bad guy. And I just laughed at this and I thought, wow, we do this in real life. Emma links up with her friend Lily, who also lost a husband, who she wasn't too happy about losing that husband. She wasn't too unhappy about losing him either. And they called themselves, and this was so fun. I loved that you wrote this, the Unwailing Widows. That was hysterical. So I said, you know, we do this in real life. I don't know why all of a sudden I'm at a lot of funerals. And even if the person is not a good person, no one stands up at the eulogy and says, oh, they were miserable. I'm so glad they're gone. Isn't everybody glad they're gone? We either say very little or we twist and conjure and weave something good about that person that wasn't there. And I just thought, what do you think about this? What are we afraid to expose in that person or maybe even in ourselves?
Yeah, I just think it's a taboo in our society to speak ill of the dead. We've all heard that expression. And it makes it really hard for you to come out and say about someone. And it doesn't have to be even a husband. It could be a sibling. And the other day, I have somebody from that I knew from school. Oh, we had a mutual friend and her sister had died. And I said something about, oh, I feel so bad to have heard that. And she goes, well, it was a complicated relationship. And that's all we dare say sometimes, because you don't want to badmouth the person. And I don't think that's ever going to change. You know, it's interesting when after 9/11, the New York Times, of course, because so much of it involved New York City, did a wonderful job of covering it. But over a period of time, they did little thumbnail sketches of every victim. And every little thumbnail sketch was positive. And you realize of all those people, not all of them were good. But even the New York Times did not say anything, you know, wouldn't have said anything negative about any of those people, because we don't speak ill of the dead. So I think you just have to, you know, if someone's been in your life that has passed away, who has had, you haven't had a positive relationship with, even though you can't come out and say, you know, my father was horrible to me necessarily, maybe you choose not to say that. I think you have to say it to yourself and acknowledge what was going on and forgive yourself. And maybe there's a couple of close friends you can confide in, so that you have, maybe there's the public closure you have where you don't acknowledge it, but then you have a private closure with some friends where you get the truth out in the open and you rip it out, because otherwise if it just festers inside you, that's very painful too. So that's something where you might share just with your own romantic partner and some friends and or whatever. But I think it's important to get it out into the daylight.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's the answer that I was looking for. I wanted to know what is the meaning of this? And I love that you said, okay, we're going to have this funeral. We're going to be honorable to this person and respectful, because their life has been taken from them. But then we're still in our own selves allowed to sort of keep this within us and learn from it.
Right.
And maybe even share it with close friends that this is what happened to me and this is how I'm working through it. I love that you said that. Thank you. That's a great answer.
I think for Emma too, it's because she hasn't dared say it to people, because her husband was young. He's been murdered under a terrible circumstance, a brutal murder. Plus, she knows if she looks at all like the unwailing widow, the police are going to zero in on her even more. But I think when she finally can talk to Lily about it, it's a real breakthrough for her to finally come out with the truth.
Yeah, that hit me quite close to home, I would have to say, Kate, because in exactly what you said, I've experienced this. I had lost a former spouse to death by suicide. Uh-huh. And that is complicated grief, because leading up to that, of course, there were very difficult things that occurred. And so when you just said that about that need to grieve that person and go through a process, even though you don't want to stand up in front of a room of people and, you know, have a ceremony for that person, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I did do that very privately. I had my own way of getting that out into the world, and I needed to. But what a important emotion you tapped into. We don't often see that explored in fiction and otherwise. And that was one of the things I really loved about your book.
Yeah, I think almost that sometimes people ask, what was the germ of the idea? And sometimes I don't even remember, because, you know, I write a book a year and I'm waiting. While I'm finishing one, I'm trying to come up with the idea for the next one. But I think I started with the idea of, what if you have to hide the fact that you don't really miss the person? But I think just the way you put it too, Kristen, is so wonderful, to be able to own it, but in a dignified way. You're not sharing all the details, but you're acknowledging that it's complicated. And of course, for people who don't mourn, there's a guilt factor too, but just having a group of friends you can share the truth with makes such a difference.
Very much. Well, I want to kind of tap into that a little bit more. One of the things that I really enjoyed about this book was you really captured the feeling of dread that you experience when you've realized you've made a big mistake. And, you know, it starts out small, and then sometimes it grows, and then sometimes something very big happens and your heart, you can just feel it's like a physical thing. You know that there's something wrong. And there's a lot of confusion and a lot of unease. And I just thought your character really captured that, which was amazing. And I was wondering what you were thinking in terms of, either for characters or even in real life, how do we move forward when we have that sense of unease, but you don't have the evidence or the facts necessarily? How do we start to explore that without becoming paranoid?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When I was writing about that, there's an analogy I use in the book. I can't remember it perfectly, but it was something that's happened to me in real life, and they seem so similar. When, as a tourist, you suddenly find yourself in an area that you didn't mean to get into, but it's not a good neighborhood, and you're not really sure, because you're in a strange city, how the heck to get out of it. And I remember once with some friends in Nairobi going out to dinner, and we were walking, and all of a sudden we realized we'd taken a wrong turn, and your heart starts to pound when you realize, I don't know where I am, and it's dark, and I don't feel good where I am right now. And so I tried to use that in terms of what Emma was feeling, when there, you know, these moments where you start to realize, you know, the first couple of times you dismiss it. In her first marriage, she dismisses things her husband does. And later then in her second marriage, as she's starting to become a suspect again, she, you know, has a tendency to dismiss at first too. When you are in a situation where you're having certain red flags, you have to get out of the habit of dismissing them. I remember a therapist we interviewed at Cosmos said, one sure sign that something's not right is if you are editing what you tell your friends. If you don't tell your friends, your close friends, certain key details about the relationship, and that's the first sign. Why am I holding back? Why am I not telling Jody that this guy, it puts me down a lot? And so then I think from there, if you can say it to a friend and see their eyes get wide a little bit, and with a good friend who doesn't necessarily want you to fail, because we've sometimes had friends who want us to fail, and they'll be quick to go, get rid of them, because maybe you are overreacting. But a good friend will ask questions and do the Q&A with you and say, how often does this happen? What else is going on? How does it make you feel? And that can hopefully start to wake you up to reality, as tough as reality can sometimes be to face.
Excellent.
That's such great little wisdom there for all of us and our listeners. And I want to take that one step further, that if then you were to confront whoever is giving you a red flag, and then they were to say to you, that, you know, it's gaslighting. Yeah, oh, that never happened. I didn't do that. Oh, that's all your imagination. Then you start to second guess yourself sometimes in life. And maybe that's where a mentor or a close friend comes in, and you can bounce your ideas off, and they can say, no, you're not losing your mind. You have a right to feel this way, and be cautious and get out, or whatever you need to do. Yeah. That's great advice for everybody.
Chris, I think you just mentioned another kind of red flag worth paying attention to. Sometimes we do misinterpret. We could say to a romantic partner or spouse, you seem kind of annoyed with me at dinner, and maybe he or she really wasn't. But if you get too many of those gaslit moments, like, what are you talking about? That's a big red flag, because you're not wrong 100% of the time. That's for sure. When you're picking up on stuff. And so I think that the person who refuses to listen to you when you are saying those things, that's a sign right there. Something's going on.
Absolutely. Well, we just grew to love this character, Emma, and we rooted for her and spoke to her. Look closer. Don't go there. We just wanted her. And then she's guiding us a little bit along the way. You wove a brilliant, absolute mystery here that was so fun to try to unravel. I loved every single ounce of it. I know Kristen did too. Yeah. And we just thank you for this wonderful novel. And I want to say to our listeners, you're going to want to connect with Kate White, and you can find her on her website at katewhite.com. You could sign up for her newsletter. She has Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and you can even find her on YouTube. And Kate, before we leave, can you give us any clues about what you're working on next?
Just quickly, I just handed in, my editor likes it, but I think it's a really cool, it's about a woman who inherits $2.5 million from a guy she had a one night stand with a dozen years before, and she doesn't know why. And a big part of what she has to figure out as forces start to threaten her is, why did he leave her that money?
That sounds so intriguing, doesn't it?
I'm looking forward to that one.
Can't wait for that one.
Who doesn't want to inherit $2.5 million, right? I don't care the reason.
Well, we're very excited about this book coming out on June 28th. Readers and listeners, you've got to pick this book up. You're going to love it. Not only is it entertaining, but you're going to feel things and learn things and just grow through the reading of this book. Okay, thank you so much. Such a pleasure meeting you today.
Chris, and thank you. My only regret is I'm not sitting in front of that fire with the two of you.
We would love that.
Thanks again.
We would really love it. We hope to talk to you again someday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Just love speaking with Kate White. And oh my goodness, Kristen, the life issues in this book alone, despite the fun of unraveling the mystery, were incredible. What hit you the strongest?
Okay, there were so many things, as I shared, because I'll tell you what, this was, to me, a book that hit a little close to home. It did. And one of the things I thought we would talk about is the sense of unease that you develop in a relationship. Maybe you're in a marriage or a romantic relationship, and you feel like these red flags are starting to pop up. And some people will say to you, well, trust your gut. Well, what does that mean? And what do you think those next steps are once you trust your gut? What do you think?
I think that what you and Kate both brought out, that run this past someone else. Because I think a lot of times, you know, we deal with a lot of emotions, and we have good days and we have bad days and we have ups and downs. And sometimes we think, am I really thinking clearly? You know, what is my gut? Can I trust my gut? But I think if you have a good mentor or a friend or a spouse that you know you can bounce these ideas off of, that could be your answer right there. And yeah, I totally agree with that. This past week, I don't want to say a lot, but I had a business endeavor that I had begun and I had a lot of red flags and I wanted it to work so badly that I started to ignore them. And then one day I actually ran it across several people, including Kristen, grateful for her listening ear. And I decided in a kind and gentle way that I was just going to probably not enter that business relationship. And I don't know, you know, what would have happened, what would the outcome would be. But I do think sometimes you just got to follow your gut. You got to think of your instincts and look at the facts and make the wise choice. And try not to make things, you want something to work so bad. And you just want this to happen and you want this to work out, whether it's a business or a relationship or something with your kids that are entering, that sometimes we do ignore those because we want to create this perfect picture. But ignoring it is not going to create it. It's just going to make you devastated at the end.
I agree. And, you know, I think, too, there are steps that you should take in addition to that without going into the paranoid category of keeping your eyes open, you know, looking for things that don't add up. And yes, there are times where you take an additional step maybe and ask some very probing questions and maybe line up some information to see if it's, you know, confirmed or if it's accurate. And this is tricky because when you are in a relationship or a marriage with somebody, there should be that fundamental level of trust, but not everybody is trustworthy. And that's a lot of what we're talking about in this book, where there's that day you realize that you've made a mistake and you've got that unease that grows to where you can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Talking with others, running it by people that you trust, keeping your eyes open, you know, looking for ways to maybe confirm some information without, again, going into that paranoid category. But also just keeping your wits about you and not trying to fill in the blanks with what you hope the situation would be, you know, and I think that happened with the character in the story, Emma. She wanted that second marriage to be wonderful, her happily ever after, and she didn't know a lot about her second husband, so she was filling in the blanks. He's successful, people like him, etc.
Mm-hmm. So true. And then let's take the flip side of that, though, because this probably is more common in our daily lives, that we tend to sometimes be a little too paranoid maybe. And we have to realize everybody's going to disappoint us at some point or another. People are not perfect and neither are we perfect. So if we're looking for perfection, we're never going to find it. And maybe if someone's disappointed us, we need to be able to categorize that as not a red flag, but hey, this is real life. And we came across a little speed bump. Let's talk about this and work it out. This doesn't mean, you know, this is the devastation and end of it all. Business relationship, whatever, but let's work it out and let me let this go. Sometimes we can let a few things go too. Yeah. It's a fine line, isn't it?
It sure is, especially when you look at the range of, you know, emotional and psychological issues that many, many, many people contend with. You know, we can't say people are good or bad. We have a range of harm that's been done to us and responses in our psyche. You know, for example, there are people who will distort information. No matter what you say or how you say it, they've interpreted it as X, Y, or Z. And so I think you're right. We've got to use wisdom as we approach these relationships. So, well, let me ask you this then. What's on your radar after reading this incredible book?
Well, I just love all of Kate White's books. So what's on my radar is I'm going back to look at some of her other books that I've read a while back and a couple that I didn't read at all. I love a good mystery like this. Especially in the summer months, it's just fun to sit and read a book like this. I'm going to take a lot of things that I learned out of this book and try to like really put them into my life and like life lessons. And that's what I love about fiction. So we've said before that some people say to me, I only read nonfiction. And I say to them, well, that's just silly because there's so much real life in fiction because it's drawn upon all of our experiences, some of which we don't even talk about. Some may be a little fantastical, but still they're based on reality. And that's what I'm going to do, get some more books and start reading Kate White. How about you?
I'm going to pay attention to red flags more. It's something I probably should have done throughout my life, but I really have been thinking about that in the past couple weeks after reading this book and just using wisdom as I evaluate those situations.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea. I think I'm going to take that one too.
I always take mine on the radar.
I always take yours. Well, listeners, thanks so much for joining us today. We just are having so much fun interviewing these New York Times, Amazon, USA Today bestselling authors. I want to give a shout out to our incredibly talented sound engineer, the Mr. Mark Carey. Not only is our sound engineer, but he's our producer. I got to give him a little kudos and also some respect because I don't know where we would be without him. Mark, you want to say hi real quick?
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show.
And we did. And we're going to leave you with a few storm predictions to pique your interest. Or maybe you want to read ahead, we're going to be interviewing Ellen Marie Wiseman in The Lost Girls of Willowbrook, Charmaine Wilkerson in Black Cake, Dolan Perkins Valdez in Take My Hand, Two Nights in Lisbon, Chris Pavone, and The Golden Couple by Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen.
And remember, listeners, one of the best ways to brave the storm is to dive down deep into best-selling fiction.